So quick to choose the path walked by the righteous, so you can go and nest among the weak. The innocent observers will refuse to find the lie within. Renew the disappointment of the meek.
Chapter 6. Peter has grown used to Stiles' interrogation and meticulous note-taking, although it's grown more difficult over the years. The hunters don't believe he'll leave them alive. They have no incentive to talk. Stiles can sometimes coax it out of them, but a lot of the time he can't. It annoys him and annoys Peter, because it means they're often at the scene of the murder for an hour or more. He and Stiles fought about it more than once, and eventually agreed on a 60-minute deadline. If Stiles hasn't gotten his answers by then, they need to go. It's been 48 minutes when Peter sees a car slowly cruise past the window outside. There's nothing unusual about that. It's a residential neighborhood, and it's late, but not the middle of the night. It could be just a neighbor. Then he hears the car door shut. It's not close, probably up the street a little bit. He peeks out one of the windows to see a man standing on the sidewalk, talking on a cell phone. It could be nothing, but his hackles are up, that internal sense that screams danger for no reason. He turns to Stiles and snaps, "Kill him now!" Stiles doesn't argue when Peter sounds like that. It saved them at least once before, probably twice. He does as he's told, and a moment later they're out the back door. Peter hisses under his breath, because of course they would be caught when they don't have a good escape route. They couldn't always be so lucky to have a target whose house was located in the wilderness. Sometimes they could take the hunter in their car, but it hadn't worked out this time because the truck he drove had no back seat. So instead, they're at a split-level house in a Boston suburb with nowhere to go but little side streets and other people's backyards. They hop the fence at the back and find themselves in an alley. And that's when the gunshots start. Peter takes the first bullet and hits the ground hard, but in the split second they were focusing on Peter, Stiles has time to act. He thrusts his right hand out with his palm facing outward, and the shield spell he has tattooed there deflects the rest of the bullets. Peter hears the whine as they pass him in the air. Then Stiles puts out his other hand and gives a wolf-like grin. "Eat this, assholes!" There are clicks, pops, bangs. The spell is one that Stiles is very proud of. A simple disrupt command that nature interprets any way it chooses. The versatility means that it can make a gun jam, make someone pursuing trip and fall, make a car blow out a tire. It keeps him from having to focus on exactly what needs to happen, which saves valuable seconds of casting time. Peter's back on his feet, but then drops to one knee. Stiles doesn't argue. They've practiced this. All of this. They don't want to fight. They want to run. Peter will always be faster than Stiles, so Stiles flings himself onto Peter's back, and he takes off, jumping onto the roof of a car, then one of the nearby houses. The shot catches them mid-leap. Stiles' shielding spell keeps it from doing serious damage, but the blunt force is still enough to send them both sprawling. Stiles lets out a grunt as they hit, and he skids on the asphalt. Peter's half-shifted without thinking, baring his long fangs at the shooter. There's a brief moment where they stare each other down, and Peter lunges forward. The man fires two more times, but it doesn't stop Peter from ripping out his throat. "You okay?" he says to Stiles. Stiles gives a little groan. "I think my arm might be broken." "Fuck," Peter says, getting an arm underneath him and helping him to his feet. He looks around the alley and sees a battered old station wagon about 50 yards away. That'll be their escape vehicle. But there's something else they need to do first. He picks the gun up off the body he had just dropped. They've never brought their own, not wanting them to be traced. But using one that belongs to their dead enemy should be fine. He presses it into Stiles' hands and says, "We need to get back in there and get the obituary." "We need to what?" Stiles splutters. "We cannot have this crime scene linked to our larger game," Peter says. "We both bled all over the place. We have to make sure it doesn't look like..." His head whips around as three more hunters spill out of the backyard and into the alley. Styles reacts a hair faster, jerking up the gun and firing. He's a great shot at the range and hits the first man in center mass, but only clips the other two as they dive for cover. Peter takes advantage of the moment to grab one of the trash cans in the alley and throw it at the two men. It knocks both of them down and they go sprawling. He leaps on the first, smashing his head into the pavement, and Styles takes care of the other. "Go!" Peter hisses at Styles, and he bolts for the house. Peter can already hear sirens. "Fucking suburbia," he mutters, looking at the nearby houses to see if anyone can see him. He doesn't see anyone staring, though that might not mean anything. Moments later, Styles comes skidding back out of the house, a bundle of rope clutched in one hand. "I untied him," he says, panting for breath. "Grab the ropes. I mean, it's obvious that his throat was cut, but hopefully they won't link it to us." Peter nods. "Let's go." He doesn't have his Slim Jim with him because he hadn't planned on needing to jack a car. He uses the butt of the gun to break the window, then sweeps the glass off the seat and sets the gun down on the street. Styles gets in the other side. He's a little pale and he smells of pain, but his wounds will have to wait. Peter drives carefully, just a couple miles per hour over the speed limit, so he won't look suspicious. They ditch the car about a block away from where they left theirs, a small park with no security cameras. Peter grimaces when he sees the blood they've left in the stolen car, but there isn't much they can do about it. They need to get somewhere that they can clean up. He drives an hour out of the city until the houses are farther apart. Then he parks on the side of a road in a small town, which has plenty of thick trees for cover. He looks over at Styles, who's been silent during the ride. "Still with me, Cricket?" he asks, and Styles nods. "Come on." They walk down the street in silence until they get to a house where he doesn't hear any heartbeats. He's glad it's a Friday night. The owner is probably out somewhere and might not even return until morning. Even so, he wants to be as quick as possible. He jimmies the back door lock and lets them in. "Just sit tight for a minute," he tells Styles, who nods but sits down in a kitchen chair, carefully not touching anything. Peter takes a few minutes to thoroughly clean himself up. He'll need to clean the car later, too, or maybe just drive it into a lake. He changes into the spare clothes they had in the trunk of the car, before going over to Styles. "How's the arm?" "Hurts," Styles says. "I don't think it's broken, though. Dislocated, maybe? I can't move my hand." Peter nods and helps him get his shirt off. Styles hisses through his teeth as the fabric is pulled away from the skin. His shoulder and upper arm have considerable road rash from where he skidded across the asphalt. Peter feels gently along his shoulder and down his arm. "Nothing broken," he says, and Styles nods, his jaw clenched and trembling. "Definitely dislocated, though. Brace yourself," he adds, and shoves Styles' shoulder back into place before he can object. Styles lets out a yelp despite himself, and then gives Peter a dirty look. Peter shrugs and goes into their first aid kit for some disinfectant. "This is going to sting like a bitch, but when I'm done, I'll give you a shot of pain drain, so buck up." "Okay," Styles says. He knows that it won't do any good for Peter to do the pain drain ahead of time if they're going to layer new pain on top of it. So he grits his teeth and tries to control his breathing while Peter cleans up his back. Peter does it as quickly as possible, wishing he could bring the hunters back to life just so he could kill them again. When he's done and he's drained away as much of Styles' pain as he can, it's past midnight. Styles is glassy-eyed and wobbly as Peter half carries him out of the house. He carefully closes the door behind them. The owner might realize it's unlocked, or might not. Either way, they've left no evidence of a break-in. "Sit in the back," he says, putting Styles there while he thoroughly cleans the front seat of the bloodstains. Then he leaves Styles there, seeing that he's asleep, and starts driving again. They can't check into their next lodging until after 3 p.m., and there's nowhere for them to go at the moment. They always spend the night after a kill driving. He heads back into Boston and parks the car in front of a fire hydrant, where it's sure to be towed within half an hour, and left in an impound lot until long after someone might connect it with them. Then they walk to South Station. There's a bus leaving at 2:15 a.m., heading south, and he gets them tickets. He puts the destination down as Baltimore, but they get off outside Philadelphia instead. From there, they get a taxi to their new digs. This entire trip was made mostly in silence, while Stiles dozes on and off. He's still obviously tired now. Peter knows that using magic takes it out of him, and he says, "We're not going to do anything today. I'll get us a new car in the morning. Just take it easy today." Stiles nods. He sinks down onto the sofa in their new apartment, massaging his aching shoulder with one hand. "How did they find us?" Peter shrugs. "No way to know for sure, but my guess is that the local hunters are starting to check in with each other at night. You can't exactly set a clock by us, but we do have a standard MO in that we strike pretty much as soon as the hunter gets home. If we haven't hit by midnight, they're safe. So they probably have a group text or some such, checking in once that window has passed. Our target tonight missed his check-in, so the others came to see if he was okay." "That's gonna complicate things in the future," Stiles says with a grimace. "It's not ideal, certainly, but I don't think it's the end of the world," Peter replies. "We'll need to vary our MO. Wait until later at night, maybe. Clone their phones ahead of time so we can see what the check-in procedure is, etc." "Okay," Stiles relaxes a little. Peter watches him as he sits there, eyes half-lidded, exhausted and in pain. "Sorry about the obituary. I know that's important to you." "Yeah, you were right, though," Stiles sighs. "We couldn't keep doing it forever anyway. The hunters aren't talking anymore. As much as I'd like to make sure every victim's family gets closure, it wasn't really feasible long term." Peter nods, glad that he's going to be rational about this. "I'm not saying you can't leave the obituaries anymore, just that we have to stop spending so much time at the crime scene." "I know." Stiles glances over at him and smiles slightly. "Thanks for putting up with it as long as you did. I know you hated it."
"I did," Peter agrees with a snort. "Speaking of hatred, shall we see what's up on the forum?"
At this, Stiles perks up.
"Oh, yeah!"
Peter takes out his laptop and opens it up. First, he checks the Boston News, which naturally is talking about the multiple homicide that had taken place the night before. He skims the article quickly to see that it hasn't been connected to the obituary killer. If the police find it odd that one body was inside with its throat slit, whereas the others were in the alley and had been shot or mauled, they weren't talking about that to the press. The article is thin without a lot of speculation. That's fine by him. Then he pulls up the Hunter Forum, and his mouth curves in a smile involuntarily when he sees the subject of the top post. OK strikes again. Kills 5 in Lowell, Mass. He reads it out loud to Stiles, who's sprawled all over the sofa.
5 were killed in Massachusetts last night when the obituary killer was cornered by hunters who came to the aid of Daniel Helms after he missed a prearranged check-in.
He begins, glancing at Stiles to see him nod at this confirmation of their theory. Helms was killed inside his home. OK was pursued into the alley, and all 4 pursuing hunters were killed. One had his throat torn out, another's head was smashed, 2 more were shot. Although this is certainly bad news, these men did not die in vain. From their deaths, we can gain vital intelligence about their killer. Or, as it is now clear, killers.
Fuck,
Stiles mutters. Peter keeps reading. What we have assumed is one person for many years is clearly 2 people working together. From the wounds sustained by 2 of the men in the alley, we can assume that one of them is a werewolf, although it is possible it could be an ogre, troll, etc. However, those are rare and not overly intelligent. So werewolf is certainly the best bet. The 2 other men were shot by one of the guns they had brought with them, so their killer was most likely human. In addition to that, there was evidence that their guns had jammed, and in one case, one of the barrels had exploded. This means that the human killer is indeed an emissary, as has been theorized for some time,
We urge you all to refer back to old posts on the forum about how to protect yourself from an emissary's dark magic.
Dark magic?
Styles rolls his eyes and gives a snort of laughter.
Okay, good luck with that, guys.
We are also setting up a new post where hunters can find others in their area and set up a similar check-in system. It might be our best way to find and put a stop to the killers. Further information about services for our fallen brothers will be up later today or tomorrow. Peter pauses, then says, That's it for the initial post. First comment is that our bounty has increased again, 500K.
Nice,
Styles says. He worries at his lower lip and says, But they found out a lot about us. Not much that they didn't already know, or at least suspect, Peter says. They've figured you were an emissary for a while. Now they know you're working with a werewolf. That's interesting, but it doesn't tell them much about how to protect themselves. And the real upside is that they obviously have no idea that we have access to their forums. That's going to be the real death knell for us, if they ever figure that out. Styles nods. At least I don't have to actually post there to get information anymore. So hopefully it'll take them a long damn time.
Agreed.
Peter yawns. I'm going to have a nap,
if you don't mind keeping watch.
Go ahead. I'm tired, but you were up all night. I'll wake you in a couple of hours and we can grab some dinner.
Sounds good. Styles and Peter have just gotten settled into their new apartment when Peter's phone rings. He glances at the screen and picks it up.
Hello, nephew. How are things going?
Okay, I guess. I don't know. I can't...
Derek's voice trails off.
Where are you right now?
Seattle. Would you like to come up for a bit?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. But I know it must be more dangerous now than it used to be. Would it be okay?
Well, it's not any more dangerous for us, Peter says. Nobody has yet discovered our real identities, so it's not like anybody could follow you to us. It would be more dangerous for you, but even so, the danger is minimal. It's been 4 months since we've hit our last target, and we've moved twice since then. As long as we don't kill anyone while you're visiting, I think it should be safe enough.
Were you planning to?
Derek asks, somehow dryly.
Amused, Peter says.
Not presently.
The first year they had killed 5 hunters, but after that, they've spaced them out more carefully. Not only do they need time to research and find their target, but the targets are now much better prepared and well defended than previously. It had taken 6 solid weeks of surveillance to get an opening last time. They had only just identified their next target and hadn't planned on making a move for at least a month.
Okay, Derek finally says, and Peter gives him the address.
Derek has to admit to more than a moment's hesitation as he stands outside the door to his uncle's apartment. He hasn't seen him in 7 years, and it feels awkward to show up there, even with Peter's explicit invitation. But he's driven all this way, and it would be stupid to turn around now, so he reaches up and knocks. It's opened a few moments later by someone who is definitely not his uncle. He's about the same height as Derek is, slender but well-muscled, wearing a pair of jeans and nothing else. He's got sleeve tattoos in black and red ink that reach up past his elbows. His dark brown hair is loosely spiked. His eyes are a beautiful amber. His lips ridiculously pink. And his chest an ocean of pale skin dotted with moles just begging for attention. It takes Derek way too many seconds to stutter.
I think I have the wrong apartment.
The young man laughs. No, you don't. Derek, right? Derek half turns back and blinks.
Yes, I... Styles?
He's so incredulous that Styles laughs even harder. Did you think I was going to stay 12 years old forever?
I didn't think you were going to turn out like this.
Derek growls at him, as Styles steps back to let him inside. He shuts the door after Derek and flips the deadbolt.
Derek's eyes are drawn to those jeans and the way they hang on his hips. He tears his gaze away. Where's Peter?
Doing his morning katas. He hates to be interrupted, but we weren't sure exactly when to expect you. Coffee?
Yeah, sure. Thanks.
Discomforted by the fact that his uncle isn't going to turn up and rescue him, Derek accepts the mug that Stiles hands to him. It's got a sports team logo on it, and Derek remembers that Stiles and Peter mainly stay in places that come furnished. Stiles turns back to the counter to get his own mug, and Derek sees more tattoos across his back, or more accurately, one tattoo. It's a forest design, but the way the branches twist and intertwine creates letters. He can't figure out what it means, though, if it's some sort of code.
What are those tattoos?
The ones on my arms are spells, Stiles says, turning back to show him. Protection spells, spells to stay hidden, to see in the dark, etc.
And the one on your back?
It's a memorial, Stiles says. The letters are the initials of the werewolves that were murdered by the hunters we've killed.
Jesus.
Derek looks at the back tattoo closer.
There must be over 100. Have you and Peter really killed that many hunters?
Well, yes and no, Stiles says, adding a ridiculous amount of sugar to his coffee. The first guy we killed had killed 17 people, the second guy 23, that he could remember. I think it actually turned out to be 26. Peter and I have only killed 13 hunters, but the victim tally so far is 143. And those ones at the top, see those?
Derek leans closer, reading the tiny letters in the leaves of the first tree.
Tears spring to his eyes as he immediately realizes why Stiles is pointing them out. NS, OH, BH, TH, and so on.
Is that?
My dad and your family, yeah. Unthinking, Stiles reaches out and traces his finger over the line of initials. Then he frowns.
BH?
Benjamin or Bethany Hale. Stiles glances over his shoulder. It's what Peter and Olivia were going to name the baby. They didn't know what gender yet, but they had picked out a name for each.
Oh.
Derek turns away and draws a hand over his eyes, then takes a drink of his coffee to steady himself.
So, Peter let you get tattoos?
The serious mood fades as Stiles laughs again. Dude, the age of consent for tattoos is only 16 or 18, depending on what state you're in. I'm 19 now. I could have all the tattoos I wanted.
That's not what I meant. It's just... Derek clears his throat. It's very distinctive, and Peter prefers to blend in.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, that's why I got it on my back. So people don't usually see it. I was just working out before you showed up. Thus, you being exposed to my blinding pastiness. We kind of weighed the pros and cons of having the sleeve tattoos. I got a small one at first, and it helped me focus my magic so well that we decided it was worth the risk to get the others. I mean, anybody who sees us in action doesn't live to tell the tale, so... Derek nods a little.
I get it.
An inner door of the apartment opens and Peter comes out, dressed in a V-neck t-shirt and jeans. He smiles when he sees Derek.
Good morning, nephew. I hope Stiles hasn't been talking your ear off. Not really,
Derek says, and Stiles smirks at him, and it goes right down into Derek's groin. He has to hastily look away.
Thanks for letting me crash here.
Not at all. Hungry?
Yeah, actually.
Let's go out and get some breakfast. They head out to a nearby diner. Peter doesn't ask what's going on, which Derek appreciates. He watches Stiles plow through a ridiculous stack of pancakes while he cuts his eggs into small pieces with his fork. He asks where Peter and Stiles were before Seattle, and they end up talking about the different cities they've lived in. They've been to New York City twice, and Stiles asks if Derek misses it. He both does and he doesn't, and isn't sure what to say or how to explain that.
It wasn't home, he finally says, but I guess I got used to it.
Stiles nods a little and says, it's hard not having a home. It's like, sometimes at the end of a long day you think, God, I just want to go home.
But there isn't a place like that. It sucks.
Yeah,
Derek says, both surprised and relieved, and a little bit sad. That Stiles understands.
It must be tough, traveling around all the time, not having your own things.
I mean, we each have a suitcase with the stuff we don't want to have to buy over and over again, Stiles says. He glances at Peter, but he's busily eating, letting them talk. The diner is quiet and nobody is close enough to hear them. Clothes, obviously. A few books, our laptops, my pillow. We used to have a PlayStation we'd bring with us, but I kind of grew out of that when I realized I could just game on my computer. Other than that, we usually stay in places that have pretty much everything we need.
The hotels all have that stuff? Like, for cooking and everything?
Not so much. God, Airbnb was such a great invention. It made things so much easier on us. Anything we want that a place doesn't have, like the last place didn't have any spatulas, we just buy and then leave there for the next people who stay there. But most of the places come pretty well stocked with the basics. Plus, they have self-check-in, so you never have to meet the people you're renting from. There's no cleaning crew that has access to your things. I can't remember the last time we did anything else.
Almost 2 years ago now, Peter says. Isn't it weird to stay in someone else's home?
Derek asks. Not really. I mean, so many of these places aren't really owned by anybody. Like, the one in San Diego was being rented out by an actual company who had purchased a whole bunch of one-bedroom apartments all over the city.
They can genuinely make a killing that way, Peter puts in.
They go for $75, $100 a night, and people will pay it because it's just for a week or two. If they rented it out as an apartment, they'd never get that much. Even if it sits vacant for a few days or even a month during the off-season, it evens out.
Derek nods. Stiles, with his mouth full, asks, What about you? Where are you living? Laura got a place. A house. It's nice, I guess.
Since he clearly didn't want to talk about it, Peter asks about whether or not he went to any of the museums while he lived in New York. They talk about the city until they're finished eating, and then they head back to the apartment.
I've actually got some errands to do today, Peter says.
Derek, is there anything you'd like for dinner? I seem to remember that you like Mexican food. Derek blinks, surprised that Peter remembered that almost 10 years later.
Yeah, that would be great.
I do most of the cooking, Stiles tells him. Peter doesn't have the patience.
You like chicken fajitas?
He adds, and Derek nods. They need to marinate for about an hour. Will you be home in time for me to do that? He says to Peter, who also nods.
Cool, I'll text you a list of what I need at the grocery.
I'm afraid you can't come with me, Peter says to Derek. Some of my contacts are a bit skittish. Oh, okay.
In all honesty, Derek feels like he doesn't know Peter any better than Stiles, despite their relationship.
You're going to leave me alone with him?
Stiles laughs and says, Yeah, come hang out with me. We can spar.
Sure,
Derek says.
Peter shakes his head slightly and says,
Try not to damage him. I'll be careful,
Derek says. With a snort, Peter says,
I wasn't talking to you, nephew.
Derek looks incredulously at Stiles as the teenager throws his head back and laughs. It's such a nice laugh, and it exposes such a nice neck, too. Derek is overwhelmed by the urge to bite it. He can't remember the last time he felt such unrestrained lust for another person, and has no idea what it is about Stiles that's doing this to him. Maybe it's just the dry spell. He's had sex with plenty of people. For a couple of years after the fire, he had more than his fair share. As if he could somehow bury the memory of Kate with other people. But it's been a while. Ever since moving back to Beacon Hills, he's been holed up in his room more often than not.
Seriously, though, Stiles says after Peter drops them off.
I usually do work out a couple hours a day, and Peter taught me how to fight, so I'm definitely not a fainting flower. But we don't have to spar if you don't want to.
Maybe not right after eating? Derek says. Hey, good plan. So, what do you want to do? Do you have hobbies? Of course I have hobbies, Derek says, glowering. But then is forced to admit, mostly I read. I read a lot too, so we can just hang, if you want. It doesn't have to be, you know, a thing. They just hang. Styles puts on some music. His phone is full of all sorts of it, he says. And Derek gingerly says he likes classical music, then waits to see if Styles will make fun of him. Instead, Styles says, oh, you know what classical piece I love? And then puts on Tchaikovsky's March Slave in B minor. Like, that's a totally normal thing for a tattooed 19-year-old to have on his phone. Derek takes out one of the books he brought, a compilation of short stories by Ray Bradbury, and Styles pulls out a text on banshees. Their latest target has killed two, Styles tells Derek, and he wants to know if that means he has any special weapons or abilities that they should be on the lookout for. It's more relaxing than Derek would have expected. Styles chatters on and off about what he's reading, or asks about what Derek's reading. His mind always seems to be at least a quarter somewhere else. Compared to the atmosphere at the new pack den, where the betas are always bickering about something, it's heaven. Before long, he feels more at home in Styles and Peter's tiny little apartment, which they don't even own, than he ever did in New York City or Beacon Hills.